Welcome, everybody, to the Patty G Show. I am your host, Patty G, here with Jason from Barbecue Guys. We're going to be talking some grilling, some chilling, a little bit of marketing, and also some moves to make and when it's appropriate to make and kind of seeing a good projection with the company as a whole. Maybe even dabble with some acquisition stuff. Whatever we can get into appropriately, we will. So, Jason, welcome. Thank you very much for coming on the show, man. I appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me.
So, what is Barbecue Guys?
Oh man, what most people think we are is a retailer that sells, you know, barbecue pits and outdoor kitchens, which we do. But you know, we've been saying it from day one. We're much more. We want to bring the barbecue community and the families together, and we think we can do that through grilling. You know, and that's where the product comes in. Is we think that there's a community out there who wants to share recipes, who really just love the art of barbecue and grilling in general. So, you know, we try to play in that world and give them the content that they want, and obviously sell the products what they want. But Barbecue Guys can help you from start to finish, and that's what we would like to do.
I love it. So, what is your involvement with it? I know the news has recently announced, you know, there was acquisition and all that jazz. But let's go way back before then.
Way back.
What's your background?
Yeah, graduated LSU in ISDS in 2004, and probably a week before I graduated, I think it was a week. Week before I graduated, I was a webmaster all through college, and I worked for the state of Louisiana, and I did some other stuff, I think, for LandSource. And a week before graduation, my boss.
Webmaster back in 04.
Webmaster, that's how old I am, yeah.
So
used to call it webmaster.
What were you doing? I mean, because the internet of 04 compared to the internet of 2020 is just
it's
so drastically
different.
It's
the same thing as somebody who's not in digital marketing or don't have an online presence now. They think that one person can do it all.
Okay.
Right? And back in the day, that person was called a webmaster. So they either coded or designed the website, changed out graphics, wrote content. They were just the webmaster. They stood up the website. So I did that for a while. And then my boss saw some talent in me, so he actually got me an interview at Barbecue Guys the week before I was graduating. I was like, yeah, sure. You know, took a low-paying job just to get my foot in the door, and I was the first marketer there. So I did affiliate marketing for about 2 years. After that, did search engine marketing for another 2 years. And every 2 years, it kind of changed and developed the role and started hiring people, you know, some developers, some marketers. Did pay-per-click marketing for a little bit, got into design, pretty much did it all. And then now where I sit is the VP of marketing and e-commerce of Barbecue Guys, and we have a great team, about 30 people, that kind of handle what we do on the website.
So it's gone from just a one-man show to now a team of 30.
Yep.
So I want to break down a little bit. You said you did a couple of different avenues of marketing. You first started off with affiliate
marketing.
What, I guess in layman's terms, is affiliate marketing?
If you come to the website and you send a customer to a website, let's say you're another recipe website.
Right.
If you send that person to the website, I'll give you commissions off of that link, off of that sale.
Okay.
And we probably have over 10,000 or so of those nationwide.
Wow. So how do you, I guess, convince people to go about becoming an affiliate? Because I know it's a
commissions.
I guess how do you find the people that are going to uphold the brand status, the brand etiquette?
And that's where it evolved, right? I think affiliates have been dying ever since. I mean, it's the oversaturation. The real big affiliates now are companies like Rakuten and Honey, to where it's just commission-based coupons, right? Bottom feeders is what we call them. I think the direction now is more of those content influencers that are going to withhold the brand and write about you from an editorial piece rather than trying to just collect money off of a sale. So that's where the industry has gone over the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years or so. That's where we're at right now, too.
And you've got, you know, the ability with social media. I mean, we're hopefully live streaming on two different platforms, Instagram and Facebook at the moment. So how do you kind of shift from affiliate marketing being, you know, just people doing something, talking about you and saying, hey, click the link below, it'll bring you to their website for the product I'm using. You know, how do we shift?
There's a very fine line. That is the shift, and that's what companies like myself and others that we're trying to figure out is, you know, you have affiliates, and then you have social media influencers, and then you have, you know, basic strategic partnerships, and there's really not that many platforms that kind of hold all that together. I mean, there's a couple, but we're trying to change platforms next year to make sure that all of our strategic partners are on one platform to where they're not double dipping.
Right. So you're trying to get to whether it be one social media platform or just different. Okay, got it.
Yeah. So. I mean, there's so many out there, and that's basically my job is to try to vet all the different agencies and all the different platforms and really try to find who's driving incremental, you know, revenue to the website opposed to just taking credit for everything.
Right. And now you've got, especially with social media and with social influencers on these different platforms, you've either got people that fall into two tiers when it comes to their pricing. Yeah. Ones that have no idea what they're worth and underprice.
Yeah.
So those are the ones, obviously, from a business standpoint, you want. Yeah. And those that overprice what they're actually worth.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so if you got somebody with 10 or 100,000 followers or likes or whatever, they're going to charge you X.
Yep.
But somebody with 8,000 but a really high engagement rate is not going to know to charge you X. So they're going to charge you half of X because they're just trying to get their foot in the door.
Yep.
When in reality, the return on that investment from a business standpoint is going to be so much better.
Yeah, yeah, and every
engagement.
Yeah, everything. Every 2 years, we kind of go back and forth. But you know, we used to think of social media as another marketing channel to drive up revenue, and it's really not. It's all about engagement, right? And and that's, you know, three metrics I go by. And we just, you know, recently deployed this, but there's an applause rate, there's a conversation rate, and then there's an amplification rate. Those three metrics right there will show you how engaged your consumers are, and the people who have engaged followers is going to get a higher price tag for sure.
So can we go into those three different
metrics? Look, applause rate, how many people are liking what you're posting, right? Mm-hmm. Conversation rate is how many times per post that are people are commenting, and then amplification rate is how many times somebody shares something. So if you can pretty much get that, and for every post, add those up, and that's your engagement rate.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it's
and we're graded on that just as much as I would grade a social media influencer as well.
Right. And so now, I mean, with the different platforms, you're able to get the metrics of the, you know, click of a button. You're able to go to your Facebook page or your LinkedIn or your Instagram or Twitter page, whatever page you're on.
Yep. You have 20 of them.
Yeah. You've got basically 20. I mean, I think I'm on five different social media platforms.
Yeah.
And so now it's okay. How do we rein all these in and really give quantifying metrics from an influencer perspective?
Yep.
You know, how can I say, oh, I've got, you know, 50 followers, but I'm getting 40 likes per post, and I'm getting 10 people commenting.
Yeah, your engagement is going to be really high, but your pool, your pond is pretty small.
Right.
But you're going to get a very high engaged follower, and that could be worth a lot of money sometimes.
And if it's a barbecue blog that's just starting out, it would make sense to pick somebody up with a smaller window that has the engagement of consumers that are going to go buy the products, as opposed to having somebody with a million followers and they get 50,000 likes and 100, 200 comments.
Yeah, you want to have
your numbers aren't there.
You want to distribute that. You want to have, you know, one micro influencer or a couple micro influencers, one macro influencer, and then a bunch of nano influencers, meaning small followers but very high engaged followers.
Yeah. And are y'all able to kind of track on the back end of y'all system which ones are performing well?
Oh yeah,
and see. Well, I guess if it's an affiliate link, you can.
Yeah, well, and that's the that's how the game has changed. Is that you usually credit people who are bringing, you know, sites to your traffic to your sites and then making revenue, and then the game of the privacy and policies and all out there about, you know, following stuff is social media influencers is actually going to be, you know, pretty hard to do if a retailer like me cannot track their usage and what they're sending from a revenue standpoint. So I'm kind of glad that it's going, you know, back to the engagement and getting your brand out there from a brand awareness opposed to having social media be, you know, basically affiliates. And again, I've already been on that road. I know what that's going to lead to, and that's just people, you know, going to the bottom of the from a pricing barrel or just not withholding your brand like you talked about.
Yeah, and then you've got, I mean, with the creation of Amazon, it's like,
yeah.
can you really get someone to go to your website, and how do you drive traffic to your website? Now, are y'all selling y'all's products on Amazon or strictly on the website?
Yeah, no, we sell on Amazon. You know, it's the number one product search-driven site out there, so we use it for a lot of brand awareness, for people to come and discover if they're searching for a grill, they can discover some of our products and whatnot. So We use it. It's not a big profit center. You know, the Amazon tax is real, and it, you know, you're not going to move a profit, but you know, if you're looking there to get, if you're looking to get your sales up and your revenue up, then it's a good spot for it.
Right. So Barbecue Guys, can we kind of go back to the origin of how it was started? You came on in what year of the company?
So the company started in 98 by the founder, and it was Mike Hackley, by the way, and that was a showroom. I think he had three, maybe, I think New Orleans, Lake Charles, and one in Baton Rouge. In 2000, they started, Corey Tisdale brought it online, and then I came on board 2004, and that's when really we started changing the name. We used to go by the name of ShoppersChoice.com, still our legal name, but ever since then, we pretty much started finding our way because we wanted to be Amazon, you know, in 2004.
Yeah. But that was...
It was a pretty, you know, promising goal of like, hey, you know, put everything on your website and you can be, you know, everything to everybody.
I mean, and y'all were started, I mean, Amazon was what, 96, mm-hmm. I believe?
Yeah.
And y'all were 98, so y'all were still right in the same
era.
Oh,
yeah. I'm making 16 years of digital marketing, and I feel like the industry is only 20 years old, you know, so.
You didn't miss much.
I didn't miss much, yeah. So, but just been doing it for a long time. But, yeah, we wanted to be Amazon. We loaded up over a million SKUs, me and five other people.
Five people loaded a million SKUs.
Yeah.
What was the
trying to
frame?
Learn how to scale. I mean, we did it throughout the course of the year, but that was the way to make money is you put up a lot of SKUs and you own a lot of domains and you kind of won at the very end of that customer buying cycle. You know, when you search for brown boots, brownboots.com came up and you won the customer that way.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, back with Google search engine optimization and search words and terms, I mean, it was like pennies on the dollar.
Yep, not pennies on the dollars anymore.
No, now
that
it's tax, dollars
that
on
tax
the
goes up. Yeah, tax goes up 10% every year. And that's that's really...
Is it really 10%?
It's yeah, I mean, with competition and Google being Google, you can see that CPC is what they call it, a cost per click. And you can bet it's going to go up, yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, what is... the term barbecue pit going for right now?
Yeah, it's going to cost you anywhere between $1.50 to $2.50 for every time somebody clicks on your website.
Wow. And I'm sure it comes up with like 20 or 30 million search results.
A lot. Yeah, you got to be pretty sure. And that's really what I do is make sure that the traffic, or not what I do, but what I love to do, is making sure that the traffic that's coming to your website, that you're actually converting, that you're actually turning that browser into a customer.
Right.
And a lifetime customer at that, so they can keep coming back outside of Google.
Yeah, I mean, because you want to have that customer retention outside of just the first search engine. You know, you want them to, hey, get in with a lower product, maybe, you know, buy some great, you know, gloves or something.
Yeah.
But then remember us, and then we throw in some different marketing tactics,
totally,
whether it be through email marketing or just ads on social media, because you've now gone to our website, mm-hmm. that we're able to make that second sale, third sale, and that follow-through sale.
Yep.
So y'all started originally trying to be the Amazon of barbecue supplies.
We try to be the Amazon of everything.
We've had, well, I guess, SKUs. You
million SKUs.
Different
we
categories.
Had, you know, tools and equipment. We had posters at one point. We even did embroidery for quite a bit. Yeah, we did. We tried everything, and that was the beauty of our founder. He was a, you know, entrepreneur at heart, so he just wanted to try everything. He said, if we can be good at this, why not be good at other verticals? So we gave it our shot, and then we realized that, you know, the customer demanded something else. You know, they wanted to experience a customer experience next to none. And even though that, you know, Amazon is probably not the best shopping experience, the reason why you transact with them is because you trust them at the end of the day. You know who you're buying from when it comes to Amazon. So
which that was huge in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
You know, trustworthy websites.
Mm-hmm. You just had to put a nice shiny badge, and everybody wanted
Google
to do business
certified
with you.
Right. Or something. You know, after you got through the sound of dial-up,
right,
and you were on the internet, you were able to say, okay, are they certified? Are they trustworthy? Because you could putting your credit card information mm-hmm. on something that you have no idea if it's going to.
And most people, you know, that have websites and a retail shop, they need to know that that all of those small little micro wins is actually what is going to gain that customer. So you really got to focus on customer experience and understand that you can maneuver your website to be, you know, a better performer than what it is now. Just because you have a website, that's not where the job ends.
Yeah, I mean, you can build a website in a matter of 30 minutes.
Yeah.
But if it doesn't function well, or you're the only one that knows how to navigate it, you've essentially just wasted 30 minutes of your time.
Yeah. Which could be a lot longer than that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a whole lot longer than that to do something well. So you're in this Amazon phase, this Amazon mentality of a website where we get customers on and we get them in with whatever product they're searching for, and hopefully they add 100 or 10 items, not 100, but, you know, 5, 10 items to their cart, check out, and now we've made this sale. How do you, from, I guess, back then, it's a whole lot different now than it was then, but how did you go about finding these SKUs to put on? I mean, what was there a thought process, a line of, you know, a chain that you said, hey, we want to be at least within this genre? Or is it just guys reach out to whatever companies and see if they'll let put us on their site?
That's how it started out, is we just, you know, we thought these particular SKUs move, so we put them on the site. And, you know, probably back in 2008, we really started dialing back. And we realized that you could not be the experts at everything. You know, and people wanted that content. People wanted that customer touch of our customer service. So we scaled it back, and what we found out was, you know, what we were really selling was, you know, products that are premium of quality that really revolves around friends and family. You know, these chairs, fireplaces, grills. It's always involving friends and family. So we scaled it back to, I want to say, a couple hundred thousand. And then every year we start dialing back more and more and more so we can be the specialists of it. And we don't want to be just everything to everybody.
Right. I mean, now you've got a DBA as barbecue guys.
Yep.
You know, so you've got to be within somewhere in that plethora of barbecue supplies, whether it be, you know, a barbecue pit. You can probably even get into tables and chairs and bars and surfaces and fridges.
Yeah,
and all
anything
that stuff.
Outdoor living is up for grabs.
Right. Yeah. But from there, y'all went from buying all these SKUs, and then y'all started creating your own lines. So what was the process behind that? Because I know generally if somebody's going to be drop shipping, for example, and they're using Amazon or whatever platform they're using, they're drop shipping.
Yeah.
They're going to get as many SKUs as they can, find the different products they can, make the connections with the suppliers, and just start selling these products.
Mm-hmm.
And over time, start kind of getting their feet wet in their own name brand.
Yeah.
Is there a metric for somebody out there who's in the process of maybe they're drop shipping some shoes or something?
Yeah,
they want to get into.
I think consumer, if you go shop, right, and if you go to the Home Depot, you're gonna see paintbrushes by HTX. If you go to Costco, you're gonna find a bunch of Kirkland brands. So it's not new to anybody that you want your own brand, not only for better margins, but you control your supply chain. And so I think that's where our own brands came up was, is that we wanted to control our own supply chain. We wanted to make sure that we had enough and we had something that other people didn't, so we can, you know, gain that customer through that. So I think this year was a perfect example with COVID that you couldn't rely on anybody else. they perhaps had COVID and shut down or you know, from a state lines or from a company standpoint. So there's a lot of frustrated consumers out there that couldn't get product. And that's still to this day, too.
You're now, I think Amazon is slowly starting to get back to their two-day shipping.
Yeah.
But everybody has been paying for their prime dues to get that two-day shipping, the next-day shipping. But all during COVID, I mean, we're lucky to get products within 2 weeks. You know, and your suppliers, if they're overseas and you can't import anything,
right,
you're at a standstill ultimately.
Yep.
And you start having SKUs that are just NA. You know, there's no stocks left available.
That's it.
So, would you all manufacturing on the States, across seas,
a little bit of both. Yep, a little bit of both, and we'll continue to do it. You know, it's something that we want to double down in and make sure that, you know, we can put out a product that consumers still want. But really, where it all started from, not just to own the supply chain, but it was because we had so many years of selling other people's grills that we had, you know, the owner had 20 years in, you know, our other owner had, you know, another 15 years. You know, I had 10 years. This guy had 15 years. So really, when you combine that, it was, you know, over 100 years of grilling experience. And so we used that knowledge and came out with something that was good quality, you know, really good from a performance standpoint at a very affordable price.
Yeah, you're able to test over the course of two decades what makes a good grill a good grill.
Yep.
And what people are buying. I mean, you've got data is king when it comes to anything digital.
Yes.
And even physical, you know.
Yes.
If you've got a website and you see the traffic and people are finding, you know, in 2018, 2019, and 2020, people over the course of these 3 years are getting heavier into smokers.
Yeah, I will know it in 2 days. and that's really where I think, you know, how we've grown and the things that made us successful is we always had our ear down to the ground of what's going on from an analytical standpoint. We're a data-driven company, and it's, you know, data can't tell you the whole story, but it'll point you in the right direction. And when you change and you pivot, you'll know if it's right or wrong within literally 2 days.
Yeah, pretty, you know, pretty instantaneous.
Yeah, it's I could change something on the website right now, and we'll know if within 15 minutes if that was the right move or not.
Yeah, and it's having that data, having those years of backlog of knowing these users' activity. You can see click-through rate, you can see page visitation, mm-hmm. how many pages did they visit, where did they navigate,
yep.
you know, and was it easy for them to navigate, what made them leave,
correct.
You know?
Yeah, you know, a prime example is somebody can come to the website and they would click on our menu and then see a product. If that rate, let's say that rate is 15%, it's always 15%. If that rate drops 15% or 5% and drops all the way down to 10%, I will get a text right now.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
from like the website uh-huh. or? See, I didn't know that was possible.
Oh yeah, and say you got to listen, right? And you got to, you know, not be so confident that it's right. You got to be confident that you can react. You can be listen to the data and change course when you know it's not right for your business.
And can you acknowledge that change is okay?
Oh yeah.
You know, it's having
change should be in your DNA.
Right. It's having that kind of almost humility of saying we're not locked in.
Not perfect.
For good. We're not perfect. What we may think is going to sell really well could end up sitting in inventory for 2 months.
Correct.
You know, and not move at all because it's not what the customers want. And it's always having that customer ready attention is what makes the company go on for eons.
Yep.
You know, and being around for 22 years now.
Yeah. I like to say, you know, our industry and our industry, if you're in internet marketing, you're pretty much the industry's changing every 3 months. So you really have to, if not every month, you really have to keep up with the Joneses, not only from your competition, but just reading what the customer is wanting. 10 years ago, people did not demand that the product should be at your house in 2 days, right? And you just got to kind of roll with those punches. But that is why change is so important, is that your business is going to change. You need to have leaders at every point, at every position within the company that can identify those changes and really empower their people and empower themselves to make a change.
Right.
You know, just because you know that something's slipping away doesn't really mean that you're actually going to do something about it.
Yeah, and it's making sure that you've got your proper, you know, chain of command, but the chain of command is not so long and so deep that a decision from somebody within one of the 30 programmers on the website can say, oh, I'm seeing this pattern, and then not take a week to react. You know, say, hey, shoot a message or whatever the form of communication y'all use is saying, hey, we're seeing this pattern. We need to make a change to either X, Y, or Z, and then instantaneously saying, all right, let's go with Y, and then just rolling with it.
Yeah, not one ingredient is going to make a, you know, successful pot of gumbo. For example, but from a business standpoint, I read a book called Mission Possible, great book, and they put it in the same context as the flying V, right, for birds. Mm-hmm. You know, yes, you have a lead, but at some point, there's going to be another leader, right, mm-hmm. and it's not to say that person's not part of the group. He just can't always be the leader.
Right.
So you got to rotate, and you got to make sure that, you know, you have a good team around you that everybody can take the charge when it's their time.
Yeah, and recognizing as a
leader when
it's time to step back.
When it's time to step back or when it's time to ask for help.
Yeah,
for sure.
And asking for help is always an important part of business and not being so stubborn-headed at times that people can be because we're human. So
yeah, my founder told me that one time, and it stuck with me for last 7 or 8 years. And we were talking one day, and he said, you're not ready, Jason. Simple as that. You're not ready. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, you didn't ask for help. You know, because he knows that I'll take it on, you know, full throttle. I'll do anything I can to do it, right? I'm going to get the job done. And at that point, I wasn't ready because I didn't help. And I thought I can grind it through in a perfect sense. You know, probably could have built out the team faster. Probably could have asked for help on strategies here and there. But, yeah, ever since he told me that, it was like, damn. Pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's I have a tendency to do the same thing, take on as much as I can and do it all by myself, but at the end of the day, there's only 24 hours in a day.
You got to realize, I mean, and not for you, but they're putting me in that position to make changes and ask for help, and if I can't do it, who is?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's exactly. But moving to kind of the business kind of overhead part. We've, you know, started as Amazon. Now you've got your own product line. But another thing which was huge that kind of came out this year and was great for, in my eyes, of the Baton Rouge area, showcasing, you know, we've had in the last 3-4 years some big money influxed into the economy from buyouts from, you know, Waiter, Marucci, Barbecue Guys. You know, there's been some big buyouts within the local area that I see as amazing, because you've got these companies that started in 98, you know, and started from the ground up and have built something for someone outside of the city to take a hold of that and say, I want to acquire that. So what can we kind of go into from the acquisition standpoint of Barbecue Guys?
Yeah. I mean, we always kind of knew that eventually, you know, at the right time and at the right price and all that, that we were eventually going to sell. The question was, to who? And we were trying to be very selective and to make sure that, you know, somebody didn't come in and gut the company and kind of just take it under their wing and roll with it. So we were pretty selective, and Mike finally chose Brand Velocity Partners, which is a pretty new but pretty awesome private equity company. And so they're keeping everything the same. You know, so far, great. They introduced us to a lot of strategic investors like the Mannings, Eli Manning, and even Peyton Manning and Archie Manning and all of them. So been on the phone with them, had great talks. They love the brand. They want to work with us even more so. So I think it's just the beginning. You know, I tell everybody, but I think Barbecue Guys, we changed the name about 2 years ago. So really Barbecue Guys is still in its infancy of what it could be. From a brand recognition. So our future growth is brand awareness. And, you know, if you go to Google now and you type in barbecue grills, you're probably going to find out who Barbecue Guys is. Just because over the last, 15 years, we've been doing a very surgical marketing tactic, pull marketing strategy, and our future is to push our brand onto people. So when you think of barbecue grills, who do you think of? You mean probably several people, right? But there's not
a lot of different. I mean,
yeah, Ace Bull, Hardware,
Traeger, or
Home Depot, right?
Yeah, it's like Home Depot.
If you want it to start, but there's not one person who's doing it really, really well. So we think that there's a lot of opportunity from a brand awareness. Though we can be that company.
Yeah, you can get your name out large enough now that you've got
endorsements. Yeah,
when an acquisition occurs, especially from a private equity company that is made up of in part highly known individuals. Mm. They bring a sort of leverage to the table that wasn't there before.
Yep.
And, you know, instantly for somebody with that national and for a couple of them global recognition, you're able to instantly get your brand to the next level. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, knowing that the company was started in 98 and to see an acquisition happen 22 years later just goes to show the importance of patience.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, if it was started in 98 and by 99 or 2000, they was looking for acquisition or looking for somebody to purchase them.
Yeah, it wasn't overnight.
You weren't even barely able to crawl at this point, you know. And it's a lot of individuals, especially the younger crowd, they...
Instant feedback.
They want instant feedback. And it's in part due to social media, which we're utilizing right now. It's due in part to that fact, because as of now, I can sit here and look and see how many people are viewing. Mm-hmm. You know, I can see how many people are liking it, how many people are sharing it. And for whatever reason, over the last decade, we've attached a little bit of self-worth to those likes and those numbers from an individual standpoint. You know, not everybody.
Yeah.
But there are some that if they put up a post and if it doesn't get the turnaround and the results they're looking for, they're going to delete it.
Yep.
You know, or they got people that will go back after they've gotten big or made it or whatever definition they want to use and delete posts.
Yeah, that just shows you also to the power of analytics and where we're at from a data standpoint, right? To instantly get feedback on how are you doing in social media based on your posts and your, you know, your gut on time is like, hey, it's been 2 hours, but nobody liked my post.
Yeah.
Like the sheer processing power. To power all that, it's just mind-boggling.
From a computer hardware standpoint?
Yeah, like, or that and just where we're at, right? I mean, to give everybody that sense of analytical data set that they can make their own decisions subconsciously now because they've been doing it for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And it's people now understanding way more in technology and how it operates. And all the way down to now, anybody can realistically pick up a camera and tomorrow become a photographer, a videographer. With the tools at our hands, we're able to instantly learn something, able to instantly pick up a skill that we couldn't have a decade ago, you know?
Yeah, that's a great point, man. I think there's an age group, and I'm certainly in it. If you're between 35 and 42, I think you're sitting on a mountain of knowledge and I don't know, DNA of how we were raised, that if you're not using that, man, you're letting something go to the wayside.
Right.
And the reason why I say that is, you know, in middle school, I didn't have technology, right? We rode our bikes. We came home when the lights came on, right? That was like probably the last of that decade, that generation to do that. In high school, still no big technology, but we had beepers, right? And so we started learning how to, you know, decipher codes, 143 and all that stuff. So we kind of played around with that. And then in late high school, that's when cell phones started coming. So we kind of got acclimated to that. And then all through college, we went through college with technology, but not social media. So Facebook came out in 2005. I was the 16th person in Baton Rouge on Facebook.
Are you serious?
Did you know that? Yeah.
I did not. You're top 20, man. Yeah. Congrats.
Yeah. Early adopter.
Yeah.
So I feel like that those people between 35 and 42, they have a little bit of old school, but they also know how to adapt and learn these technologies on the fly. And that's, to me, is super powerful when a manager or a director can learn from, you know, learn with the younger generation how they think, how they act, and whatnot. So if you're that age and you're not using that power, man, it could be super powerful for somebody's career.
Yeah, and you've got at least, if you're within the 35 to 40 age range, you've got hopefully at least a decade within your profession under your belt. And people are always looking to take the next step, take the next leap within their career. And you're in a world where a majority of the businesses are still owned by people 50 plus.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Local businesses.
And talking to people around that technology, it's a hard conversation.
It's a hard conversation because they have to have the humility in saying that they may not know how to operate the technology.
And they got
to
get past it. It's my way or the highway. I don't trust this data.
I don't trust the data. I don't trust the metrics. Where is this coming from? Who's China? Like, what is happening? You know, and as the younger generation within that 30-year-old to 40-year-old demographic, we have to have empathy and understand where they're also coming from. You know, we can't come to them with the same mentality of it's my way or the highway. We have to come with them and say, hey, look, check this out, how great it can be for us, and have the patience and empathy to walk through with them the steps it takes. The metrics you're going to use, how you're going to pull the data, and the more information you're able to give them and present to them, the better the sell is going to be for your superiors.
Oh, yeah.
And the better they're going to just, they might even, you know, actually act on it.
Yeah. The best thing that I think a manager can do is empower their employees. And, you know, one of the themes we've been talking about is constant change. What I know is that I have 30 people in my department, and probably half of them are going to be running a department within the same organization in the next 5 years.
Wow.
That's how much is going to change. And so, you know, just if you be patient, And if you show that you can lead, if you can show that you can adapt and understand trends, that's what you do. That's what I did, right?
Yeah.
So if you know the company's growing, and if you know that you know your stuff and you want to change, the opportunity is going to be there. Mm-hmm. And that's what I look at, is making sure people have that ability to change and the desire to lead. And
right.
They'll be running a department.
Because it's in a world of instant gratification, how do you convey to someone the importance and the power of patience?
Yeah.
And the importance of waiting to get that gratification at a later date.
How about this? Maybe not so much of waiting, but creating.
And
right?
Then, yeah.
Because there's a lot of people that's like, hey, I do this. Well, we have to tell you to do it. So I think the idea of, hey, I have an idea, sits right there. You really have to take a look at yourself in the mirror and say, what is holding me back from creating this? Mm-hmm. And the people who can push through that wall and understand it's only them, that's the people who are going to find success, especially in our industry, just because the future is unknown, the technology is unknown, right? If I have to do referral marketing, which I'm, when we're standing up currently, it's like, go learn it and rock it,
Yeah.
There's no books you can read on it. As much as you want, the book's going to be outdated with by the time you buy it.
Yeah, by the time it goes through its publishing process and its cycle, it's going to be outdated. But human relationships is not.
Yeah.
And being able to make a connection using whatever medium is of the day.
Correct. And that's just a channel. Channels are going to come and go. And the easy example is like a TikTok, right? Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? Right?
Yeah.
And so my team has to learn how to operate that channel. And if one goes away, or another one comes on. So, you cannot just say that I'm an expert at this and be satisfied, or at least say, hey, I am worth this, because channels are channels, man.
Yeah, they're channels, but at the end of the day, if you can't adapt and you only have one channel,
nope.
If you're only on like Instagram and that's your bread and butter, well, to me, I'm a big promoter of going where the eyes are.
Totally.
And the eyes are everywhere. They're on so many different platforms.
You got to cut grass where there's grass.
Yeah, that's it. And once you cut one pasture, you have to wait for the grass to grow before you can cut it again. It's not as soon as you finish, you just go and reharvest.
Right.
You have to be able to move on to the next pasture and rotate to find where the crowds are, where the people are.
Yep.
Otherwise, you're going to be sitting there waiting for more people to
come
on board.
Yep.
And from an influencer standpoint, they're going to hit a plateau.
Yep.
But if you're able to go on like TikTok that feeds back to your other social channels, you're going to see your other social channels growing because of the just mass swarm onto that one channel.
Yep.
Because in reality, TikTok created something that Facebook, Instagram, and other platforms were slow to create, and that was a medium that fed its users at their own attention span.
Yep.
Yep. We're 40 minutes into this, right?
Yeah.
TikTok, we'd have to make 400 of these clips.
No. Yep.
Because they're able to navigate people's attention span as 12, 15 seconds at most.
Yeah.
A decade ago,
one of our biggest platforms is YouTube, and we used to put out 25-minute videos. And do you really think that somebody's going to watch a 25-minute video in today's world? The answer is no. We always got to adapt. Everything that we're doing is shorter, quicker. And how do you still can put out something that is engaging is the challenge. I think that is the job.
Yeah. How can you engage on something for a certain period of time?
Yeah.
And what I try to tell people when they ask me is, okay, for example, my thought process behind the podcast in the long form, the show will probably wrap up around 55 minutes to 60 minutes. But within that, on the back end, you can take it and clip it up into probably 20 different segments of individual questions, individual topics, and repurpose it on different social platforms for that specific need.
That's the key.
And taking that and realizing the importance of it and utilizing it in the different avenues. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn has a max video clip of 10 minutes. Twitter has a max of 2 minutes. So you can't use the same video clip for LinkedIn as you could for Twitter. Because they're different platforms, different mindsets of people. I've got four DMs in Twitter, in Instagram, I mean, in LinkedIn of people selling me before they even know who I am. Because they're with the mentality of business.
Correct.
There's no need to have a handshake and sit down for a cup of coffee. Here's my plan. Here's my product. Buy it. But on Twitter, it's news driven. It's facts. It's bullet points.
Correct.
So you want to have a minute, 2 minutes. You don't want to have anything longer than that because no one's going to watch it. And every... You got to have rapid fire stuff going through within the 2 minute clip that people will actually attain and digest. And then you go to Instagram and well, now you've got four different options for clips lengths. You've got your regular posts that go up to, I think, 15, 30 seconds.
And you know what that means for, you know, we have a creative director who's great. She understands this and just the sheer grit, you know, of to produce all of those different cuts and edits. It's almost like, you know, everybody wished that they can just pick one, but in today's business world and e-commerce world, you can't. You got to be all over the place.
You got to be all over
the place.
That's
what makes it real.
And you have to also recognize what the formatting of the platform is. The same video, if I take a video, a clip of this, and I put it onto Instagram, well, it's got to be formatted differently because it's a mobile device. If I'm putting the clip on Facebook and LinkedIn, well, it's got to be a different format, more widescreen, because people are going to view it on their computer as well as their mobile device. So all of that also has to go in the back of your head when you're creating content and you're clipping up stuff, you know. So it's like for barbecue
content
guys,
content is not cheap.
It's not cheap. And for, you know, for the sake of a barbecue guy platform or plan is like, hey, let's get some celebrity chefs. Let's have them only use all of our gear, all of our products sold on the site. Within videos, you can embed product tags. You can embed links to the website. So let's do a long 30-minute segment. But let's clip up them cutting up the vegetables. Let's clip up them stirring the pot. Let's clip up them braising the meat. And now we're able to have 3 to 10 different products within 3 different clips of content that we can repurpose all over the web. You know, we can showcase this knife by so-and-so while they're clipping up vegetables. We can showcase
there's platforms out there. There's enterprise platforms that would do all that for you.
From a
machine learning. They know, they recognize your products, they recognize your feed and what that means to the videos, and they'll recognize certain segments of a video and attach that to a product, which is crazy.
I don't think in 1998 when the company was formed that topic would be brought up at a board meeting or be brought up at a creative meeting. You know, hey, does anybody know any cool tech that's able to capture the products and digitally read what
it is?
And
look, I mean, we do. I mean, that's what I talked about from a chain standpoint, is that you have to know what's out there because you have to be more efficient. You have to grow revenue with limited resources. There's always this constant battle to grow, and then how do you do it? It starts with research, I'll tell you that.
And research is key for everything. But starting to kind of wind up the show and get towards the end, I've got a series of bullet but not so bullet questions to ask. One of them is you've been in the game for marketing for 4 years shy of when, of digital marketing for 4 years shy of when it actually originated. So I'm assuming you've gained some lessons and some, you know, you've learned some stuff throughout the years. So what are like two or three top lessons that you've kind of learned over the course of the years doing this?
Oh man, you know, going back to values that I think that makes, you know, somebody unique and all that is to always have, you know, a creative vision, right? Always make sure that you can think creatively, analytical. I think the way we talked about tonight, everything, you need to have that analytical mindset. And then be childlike, you know, childlike as if, you know, nothing can stop you. You'll figure it out, you know. All those things allows you to adapt, is my point. And so just learning how to adapt, learning how to read data, don't be scared of it, you know. Apply it, put some prescriptive analytics on top of that to make sure that the data is working for you.
Yeah, makes, I mean, that's, in an ever-digital world, that makes complete sense. And if you don't have those skills and you're not learning those skills, well, you...
Somebody else is.
Somebody else is, and they're going to come out on top of you.
Yeah, if you're not, and that's the, probably the better answer for your question is, you know, if you don't use your first-party data, which is the data that you collect, whether it's about your customers or just about how you're doing in business, if you don't act on your first-party data, then you're going to get disrupted because somebody else is.
Somebody else is, and in addition to learning the customer data, they're trying to learn a way to circumvent you. Because it's greedy.
It's dog eat dog.
That's it. So next question is, what is something that you did as a kid you wished you still could do today had no one stopped you?
Professionally or personal?
Whichever one you want.
I would say nap. I'm a huge napper, man. I don't nap enough. I need to nap more. But think about it.
I'm right there with you.
I think people, and look, you should do something that you love doing, right? So I should probably go home right after this and work. And I don't mind. Like, I should be working at night. Why? Because I love what I do. That's a lot of energy. And how are you going to withstand that with energy and perform at a level that you need to perform? It's called naps. Naps are a whole lot of coffee.
Yeah.
And so I do both. I don't nap, obviously, but I wish I could.
Not at work. Yeah, not at work.
I wish I could nap at work, because I just think, you know, keep your mind refreshed, you know, get 8 hours of sleep at night, wake up refreshed and tackle the day.
Yeah. I love that. What do you love about Baton Rouge the most?
Culture. I travel a lot. I cannot be in another state for more than 4 nights.
Really?
Bring me back to Baton Rouge, bring me back to Lafayette, New Orleans, I don't care. I love Louisiana. Man, the food, you know, the language, the sports. We have our own music. We have our own culture, and that's something that I've never was like, hey, when I go to these shows in New York or Chicago, I was kind of like, yeah, I'm just a little guy from Baton Rouge, you know, and kind of shied away from that, even from a marketing perspective, didn't want to tell our audience that we were from Baton Rouge. And then about 10 years ago, that completely changed.
Really?
Now I walk in a crowd, very proud, put my cowboy boots on, you know, show them that I'm from Louisiana, and for some reason, people love that. From the north. You know, yeah. And maybe it's because I'm surrounded by a couple other people or a couple hundred other people that don't have an identity or a place that they call home, you know, and proud of their culture. But Louisiana is so different that I think you need to embrace it. Yeah. That's what's going to make you stand out.
Embrace it and promote it to anybody and everybody that'll listen.
Yeah, that's who we are, right?
Yeah, and it's easy to tell who is from Louisiana or even the South for that matter when you go into a room. Because they're we're loud, proud.
I remember one time, man, I was in an Uber with some customers and clients and whatever at a trade show, and we were in an Uber, and I was telling them about the music in Louisiana, and they just didn't get it. So I put on like some Wayne Toups and some Keith Frank, and I was like, "This is Louisiana music. It's called Zydeco."
Oh my gosh!
They loved it.
They probably never even heard of Zydeco before that.
They don't, and that's the beauty of it, right? I mean, they think we're a part of a different country, and here we are just in the States.
Yeah, in the States, we weather 28 hurricanes, and we just keep moving on.
Yep, take a beating.
All right, man, so one more question for you is, what can I do to help?
You?
Yeah.
I think, you know, understanding that Barbecue Guys is open for business is probably the first thing, right? There's not a lot of people who are coming and graduating from LSU that are considering internet marketing or just in business in general. So knowing that we're open for business and looking to hire, I think we already hired 100 people this year.
Wow.
Because of COVID. Great growth, great, you know, learning experience. Like I said, the constant ability to change and to lead and do all that. So, you know, if you're ever coming across hungry entrepreneurs, send them my way.
Yeah.
And then I think the second thing is, how many shows have you done this year?
This year alone, yeah. You're number 51 for 2020.
You need to host a party for everybody who's on the show so we can all network together.
I've actually genuinely thought about
doing that. You should do it.
Okay, now I just need a location.
Somebody from your previous...
Somebody from a previous show. If you've got a spot where we can do something, we can host 50,
host the party, man.
50, 60 people. Well, no, scratch it. They bring somebody. Where can we host 200 people?
There you go.
Who came on the show? Because, I mean, we've had some really great people this year.
DMs.
Yeah, DM me, email me, contact me. If you've got my number, text me. Just reach out if you have a place where we can do an event.
A networking event, yeah.
A networking event with everybody that's been on the Patty G Show. Because, we are on, I believe you are episode 63.
That's awesome.
Or 64 overall.
That's awesome.
And we skipped the first week because I don't do any shows during Christmas or New Year. So we only do 50 shows a year because it's a weekly release date. So you're episode 40, you'll be episode 49 of the year. And
nice.
Then tomorrow we'll record episode 50. And then we'll be done for the year.
So, congrats.
Thank you. Maybe you'll do like a Patty G Show Christmas party everybody.
I'll show up. Put me down. I'll supply the barbecue.
I was about to say, can we do some barbecue? some barbecuing? We'll get Jay to Cody do
some. Yeah, we could do some raffles, yeah.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay. I'm liking this now. Because I've got 64, whatever the number is for the episodes. So there's amazing people in Baton Rouge and the surrounding area who I've interviewed and brought on the show that are just doing great things like y'all. You know, we're bringing people on that are really making a difference and really showcasing Baton Rouge. You know, that's the whole idea around the show. I mean, like,
it's the idea around the city.
Exactly.
Right? You know, we all help each other.
Your comment about what can you do is to let people know that you're open for business with LSU students and people graduating from college. My fellow students at LSU when I was there were always preaching about they can't wait to get out.
Yeah.
They can't wait to leave Baton Rouge, leave the state, you know, and sure, go travel, go get cultured. That's great.
Back.
But come back.
They'll come back.
Because the opportunity is so great here.
Yeah.
You know, like you said, you hired 100 people in COVID.
Yep.
In COVID, you hired 100 people. So the power of things that are happening here in your local community are huge and
it's
massive.
Yep.
And if you're not from around here, come in and visit and you'll understand why it's so great.
Yes.
So, Jason, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, man.
Driving out here to this gorgeous location. If only
we had
fire.
Very nice.
It would make it a little bit better, but you know, maybe
good
next
job,
time.
Good job, Randy.
Well, for y'all listening or y'all watching, thank y'all so very much. I appreciate it. I am Patty G, the host of the Patty G Show, here with Jason from Barbecue Guys. Y'all go check them out. If you're listening to the podcast, all of their websites and platforms are going to be linked up in the show notes. Be sure and give them a check out. So thank y'all so very much, and y'all have a good one. Thanks.